Welcome into Real Pod Wednesdays. Dan Hope joined by Andy Anders as Ohio State is now 10 practices into spring football. Ohio State completing its 10th practice of the spring on Wednesday morning. Coming to you a little bit later here on Real Pod Wednesdays today so that we can talk about all the latest developments from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, because it's certainly been an interesting week for us covering Ohio State football, as since the last time we talked to you last week on Real Pod Wednesdays, there have been several Ohio State interview sessions, as well as the Student Appreciation Day on Saturday, which gave us our first real opportunity to watch the Buckeyes in competitive team drills, 11-on-11 situations. And I don't know about you, Andy, but I think I'm still buzzing a little bit just about what we saw from Jeremiah Smith on Saturday.
That was certainly the highlight, Dan. His spectacular grabs over Jermaine Matthews when, you know, Jermaine was trying to tug him to the ground essentially by his jersey. He rises up, makes a fantastic play on the ball, and then the other catch he had. I mean, those two big catches really just show why, you know, he's not only in a position where we expect him to start year one probably, but even be a star year one, like go out and, you know, as I said before, I don't think even in like a 1,000-yard season as a freshman is that far out of the realm of possibility for Jeremiah Smith. He's that good. And we got eyes on that against some of the nation's best defensive backs, because the second catch he made was over Denzel Burke. We got eyes on some of what he's capable of against some elite defensive backs on Saturday. So the hype train is real. It's only going to keep rolling from here.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case. I think, you know, we've heard coaches and players compliment him throughout the spring. Really no effort from anyone's part inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center to douse the hype surrounding Jeremiah. And I think Ryan Day, even though he said he wanted to be careful about what he said, continued to add fuel to that fire after Saturday's Student Appreciation Day practice.
I'm going to be careful what I say, but he's been certainly a pleasure to watch, and we're all very excited about his future. If he continues on the path that he's on, he's going to play a lot of football and certainly will have a chance to start as well.
I'll be very surprised if Jeremiah Smith does not start for Ohio State at this point. I think he's just too talented not to be a starter. And I think it's, you know, I think he's very clearly going to be in that top three or four receivers. I think it's very likely, and I know this can sound hyperbolic, but, you know, people who have listened to the podcast for a long time know I'm not the type of guy to, you know, go all hyperbolic about the new guy on campus. You know, Andy is not either, but this guy is unique. I mean, I've said it before off air. I don't really think that any of the other freshmen are going to see a lot of playing time for Ohio State this year, but I think Jeremiah is going to play a lot. And I think Jeremiah is going to have a big year. I mean, I don't know if I want to quite go of 1,000 yards yet, but I think there's a good chance, and this is nothing against Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes, who I think are both going to be excellent players too. But I think there's a good chance Jeremiah Smith is going to start the year as Ohio State's second best receiver. And I think it's very possible that he becomes Ohio State's best receiver by the end of the year. And that's nothing against Emeka Buka, who I think is one of the best receivers in the country. But I think Jeremiah Smith is a special talent, and you just see it watching him that freshmen aren't supposed to look like that. I mean, he just looks a step ahead. I mean, even when I think back to other star receivers we've seen at Ohio State, you know, Garrett Wilson, I remember he's probably a guy that, you know, definitely caught my eye a lot as a freshman too, even just in camp, you know, looking really good from the beginning. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr., you could certainly see the talent right away, but I don't think he was doing things in his first spring that Jeremiah Smith is doing right now. And so I just think the trajectory for Jeremiah Smith is incredibly high. And because of what potential he has, you have to think about him outside of the typical guardrails you put around a freshman.
Yeah, there's no typical freshman limitations that you can put on a prospect like this. And I think it's the polish that we've discussed before playing in South Florida for South Florida Express and the development that's gotten there. So there's a certain level that you expect Ohio State's receivers room to always be at under Brian Hartline. And with Jeremiah proving the hype the way he has in these practices in certain ways, and still a lot to go, but it's just the early returns, a lot of assuredness about what this receivers room is going to be. Dan, I have less assuredness now than I did before the spring about what this quarterback room is going to be. Because on Saturday, to me, I didn't think Will Howard performed particularly well watching him. Now, it's one practice. There are many more in the spring that we don't get to see. And the areas he struggled in, the deep ball, mainly throwing the ball further than 20 yards down the field, it didn't seem like, I can't recall really an accurate ball that he threw other than one that was dropped by a receiver later on in practice. He was good in the intermediate areas, had some good pocket awareness, did some things well to escape, extend plays. But for me, I expected Will to be further along this spring. And I think a lot of that is also when you compare it to what Julian Sayin looked like on Saturday, lacing balls in between coverage really nicely. I feel like he had the most zip of all the quarterbacks, Sayin did, the accurate. But the one I thought had the best all-around day was Devin Brown, mainly due to just being good, solid in a lot of areas. He, I think, probably was the most consistent deep ball thrower. Julian didn't get a lot chance to uncork a lot of deep balls, neither did Lincoln. No, Lincoln had a nice deep ball to Jeremiah Smith that resulted in one of those catches we talked about earlier. But I thought Devin was the most consistent deep ball passer. Thought he did fine in the short and intermediate throws, did a great job extending plays, scrambled when he didn't have to a time or two, I thought, but also scrambled when he should have a time or two on top of that. So he and Will are kind of similar in that ability to extend plays, though I do think Will's pocket presence looks a little better. To me, Devin was the best all-around quarterback that we saw on Saturday, and I think this competition's a lot more real than I realized. I also think that, though, by that same token, this is kind of feeling like last year where, you know, both quarterbacks are kind of looking mediocre a little bit. And is someone actually going to rise up and take the job and be, you know, meet the standard of an Ohio State quarterback?
Yeah, I think that's where the worry maybe starts to come in 10 practices into the spring, where it doesn't feel like anyone has really separated yet. Because you think back to what happened last year, and we were kind of at a similar point at this point in the spring, and then it ended up dragging out all the way into the start of a season. Now, I don't really think that that's going to happen again, but I do think that, you know, the spring game coming up next week and the end of this spring, it's going to be important for, you know, someone to take a step forward. You know, I think, you know, that's something that's going to need to happen here in these next 5 practices if Ohio State is going to be ready to name a starting quarterback coming out of the spring. And, you know, I know, you know, I heard from someone who was at practice on Wednesday that Devin was still taking the first reps today. So I think, you know, it is very much, at least between those two, I do believe it is very much a battle. And maybe, you know, if you were setting odds on who the starting quarterback this season was going to be right now, you'd probably still put Will Howard at the top of that odds board, because he is a guy that has starting experience. Ohio State brought him in to be a starter. I mean, Ohio State didn't work with its NIL collectives to get NIL money for Will Howard to bring him in to not be their starting quarterback this season, but he still has to go out there and earn it. And I don't think that that's happened yet. Now, we say this negative stuff. He did lose his black stripe after Saturday's practice. Ryan Day said positive things about Will Howard after Saturday's practice. So it's not all bad, but I just think there's more that needs to be seen. And, you know, we talked about it when Will first came in. There was some projection there of, when you put him in Ohio State's offense with better players, is he going to be able to take that next step as a passer that he needs to if he's going to be the quarterback Ohio State needs this season? And the reality is, in our first setting of really getting to see Will throwing the ball in competitive settings to Ohio State's receivers, he did not look great. And so I think we're both going to be going into that spring game next Saturday, curious to see, does Will Howard look better? And if he doesn't, then I think I might come out of that spring game thinking, you know, Devin Brown's got a real shot at winning this starting job, especially if he can build off of what we've seen from him and perform well in that spring game. I said in and when we were talking about Jeremiah, that he was really the only freshman I really expect to play a significant role this year. But there is that wild card possibility out there that Julian Sain could potentially emerge as Ohio State starting quarterback at some point this season. Now, I would not bet on Julian Sain being Ohio State starting quarterback going into the year. But to your point, Andy, he did look very good on Saturday. I believe he is the most talented pure passer on this roster. And so is that enough for him to really get into this quarterback competition and potentially even be Ohio State starting quarterback this year? I'm not ready to go there yet, but I do think the talent is there, and I think he's performing well. I mean, you know, we talk about losing Black Stripe. He hasn't even lost his Black Stripe yet. So to say that he's really in the thick of a starting quarterback competition, I would not go there yet. But I do think that, you know, you can see the talent there to where he's a guy who has a very high upside for the future. And if neither Will nor Devin is able to clearly separate themselves, that may give Julian a chance going into preseason camp to compete for that job.
Excellent thoughts. And, you know, I agree with all of them there. I think for me, Julian might have a chance to sort of do a, you know, late season type Tua Tagovailoa play or something. If Will and Devin aren't playing to a certain level, whoever does win the competition, right now, like you said, I'd give the best odds to Will Howard on that. But if you're not getting what you need out of those guys, if they're not showing what they need, I think there's a real possibility Sain has the talent to eventually become the team starter if expectations aren't being met. For me, though, if nothing else, what he's shown in that student appreciation day, what he's shown generally, is enough for me to look at it and go, you know, that looks like the starting quarterback in 2025, if nothing else. I think Julian Sain, there's so much zip on the ball. You can see the arm talent just watching him. And there's a clear reason that they wanted him in the transfer portal, despite already having Aaron Noland in the fold for that class. Now, plenty of other standouts on Student Appreciation Day. And I think for me, the biggest ones and the most exciting ones to see were the linebackers, CJ Hicks, Sonny Styles. CJ, I thought, was the best defensive player on the field. And I was not expecting that coming in because he struggled in the Cotton Bowl, the couple of snaps he got. He has been a guy that obviously the last two seasons we've constantly heard, hey, he's going to be unleashed, in Jim Knowles' words, or just last season more so. Didn't happen, really. Coming into this year, there's that open spot at the Will linebacker spot. Sonny moves in to compete with him, and CJ was just all over the field. I mean, taking full advantage of the way that Will linebacker kind of plays sideline to sideline in this defense. His blitzes were ferocious. He balled over Travion Henderson to get a sack on one play. Sonny Styles wasn't much behind him when he was on the field either. We saw Sonny a lot come in kind of that Sam role, and they played odd fronts where Sonny would be on the end of the line of scrimmage. I thought that was very intriguing. Sonny also had a lot of plays in the backfield like CJ. So either of them, what we saw at Will linebacker in that practice was very encouraging, because it's really, again, the only question mark with this defense.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear what James Laurinaitis said about CJ Hicks on Wednesday, because, you know, we certainly, from what we saw from CJ Hicks on Wednesday, or on Saturday rather, you could certainly see that CJ has the ability when he's on his game to where he could be a difference maker for this defense. But it still sounds like there's a level of consistency that James Laurinaitis and Ohio State want to see from CJ Hicks if he's going to earn that starting job.
I think CJ Hicks has done a phenomenal job. you know, you got to keep pressing him and making sure that he's really tapping into everything that he can offer. You know, I think CJ sees the opportunity, and he's, you know, certainly making a case to get on the field this fall. You know, so I think it's been a really good spring for CJ. There's just always, you know, whenever you have a good day, you got to follow it up by another good day, you know, and kind of stack days. And I think that's what a pro does. You know what I mean? Like there's always, if you want to be a pro, you got to keep stacking them. That's the expectation. And I think, you know, he's had some really good days, and then he's had some days where you're like, you're trying to push him a little bit. But I think CJ, where he is now compared to where he was last fall, is he's a lot better.
Well, the consistency is such an important element to playing linebacker. When you're talking about stopping a running game, especially, the defensive line is kind of setting up the linebackers to make the tackles. That's how it often works. And if you're not in your right spots consistently, that can open up holes to get gashed in the ground game. And all, you know, even in coverage as well, you get out of position on a play. Consistency is so important to the position. So despite all those flashes that we did see on Saturday, I can see where consistency might be something that holds a guy back. But hopefully CJ is working on that this spring. We saw him taking extra reps after interviews or during interviews, even with Tim Walton, actually, to kind of work on some of the slot coverage assignments he might have to have playing that will linebacker spot this year. In front of him, a lot of guys at defensive tackle that were flashing during practice. I think for me, the biggest one that stood out just in terms of maybe surprise factor was Will Smith Jr., because we really haven't seen a lot of Will Smith. He's been injured, obviously an Ohio State legacy, but he was making a lot of plays from the three technique defensive tackle spot in that practice. Caden McDonald's another one who was in the backfield a lot. Both of them had a safety. And Jason Moore, who we've heard a lot about this offseason, there's been a lot of buzz, mainly from Larry Johnson when we talked to him last, about what he can bring to that three tech spot with his length. And he also, I thought, popped a little bit in certain areas of that practice. So the defensive tackle depth, those are all depth guys, was, I think, the second most impressive thing I saw on defense for Ohio State after some of the strides that were being taken at will linebacker.
Yeah, you could say Jason keeps drawing more and more buzz with the way he's performing this spring. I know Luke Montgomery, when he was being interviewed on Monday, was asked about, you know, who's a guy at that defensive tackle spot who's been giving you some trouble as Luke settles in at that right guard spot. And he singled out Jason Moore as well. So it seems like he's having a really good spring. And to your larger point, I think the defensive tackle depth on this team is becoming really intriguing, because I think with all three of those second year guys seemingly taking a step this spring, along with Hero Canoe, a guy who I think has the potential to play a lot more in his third year. You know, I think you look at the potential now for them to have a really solid three deep at that defensive tackle position. And that doesn't even include Taiwan Malone, who was a guy who, you know, came in last year with some expectations. We really haven't heard a whole lot about him this spring. And so you kind of get the sense that he's been passed over by some of those second year guys. But I think if those guys can continue to build, I think you feel pretty good about the depth you have there at that defensive tackle position. And that could be important, especially over the course of a long season, because, you know, I think for as well as Tyleek Williams played last year, I think maybe the amount of snaps he played, maybe you saw him slow down a little bit later in the year. You know, Ty Hamilton's a guy who's going to play a lot, but we haven't really seen Ty yet playing that role where he's got to play on every single snap. So having that depth there is going to be important. And I think Larry Johnson is doing a good job of building that this spring.
Without question. And the depth at receiver, too, on the other side. We talked about Jeremiah Smith earlier. You have those top four guys, obviously, with Jeremiah, with Carnell, Brandon, and Isemeka Ebuka. Bryson Rogers, another guy who stood out, had a really nice 70-yard touchdown catch and run, made some other plays in that practice. You can see the shiftiness. You can see the short area quickness that coaches have talked about with him. Now, question is if he can contribute this year, because you have a stack of guys in front of him, even Jaden Ballard maybe in that mix, entering his senior year. So really interested to see if he can carve out a role and how telling that would be for his future, a guy who almost transferred out in the offseason, right? So really positive signs from Bryson there after all of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at the way he's performing in practice and you think, you know, he might be Ohio State's fifth best receiver this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up becoming that. But he's primarily a slot guy, as is Brandon Innes, as is Emeka Ogbuka. And so how will there be a consistent role that can be carved out for him on the offense this year? I don't know that I necessarily see that, but I do think that he's a guy who's showing Ohio State something to believe that, you know, he's a guy who can play as they need him this year and has the potential to grow into something bigger down the line. And I think, you know, that's important for a guy like Bryson Rogers, because you look at that class in front of them, the guys who would be in their third year right now. You know, two of those guys, Caleb Burton, Caleb Brown, transferred out last year. The two who are still at Ohio State, Kojo Antwi, Keon Grays, they just haven't really seemed to gain a lot of traction. We did see Keon getting a good amount of reps out there on Saturday, but we just haven't really seen either of those guys really gain a lot of traction in such a talented room. I think Bryson is doing the things he needs to do to give himself a chance, even with all the talent Ohio State is assembling in that room, to have a role, whether it be this year or further down the line.
You know, we've talked about the quarterbacks, we've talked about these receivers. If any of those guys are going to have time to make plays, it's going to have to start up front. The right side of the offensive line, that competition has been the top storyline for me. I'm sure a top storyline for a lot of other people who aren't as offensive line obsessed as I am. But I've loved to follow it this spring. And it really looks like to me that Luke Montgomery is starting to take some assertion of that right guard spot. We've seen coaches indicate that he is a guard moving forward on this team, whereas Tegra Shibola is a tackle. Ryan Day was the one who said that. And that means Josh Fryer sticks at right tackle, and you have that's your starting right side there that we've seen these first few practices, saw it again, Student Appreciation Day. And, you know, it's funny at these practices, you kind of split your attention between when you're, you know, I was standing up on a bench and they had 7-on-7 going on one side and they had 1-on-1 pass rush drills on the other side. And I'm equally interested in both. So I'm kind of switching my attention back and forth and watching Luke Montgomery go up against some of those defensive tackles we just talked about, like a Will Smith Jr., like a Jason Moore, like a Caden McDonald, and stonewalling them every rep I saw. Now, I didn't see all the reps. I'm not going to pretend and sit here and say that he won every single pass rush snap that he was there, but every snap I saw in those one-on-ones, he won. And then in team drills, there was a few really, really nice pass blocks he had against Tyleek Williams, soloed up, didn't have any double team help or a chip from some other position. Did a really nice job on Tyleek. Just every play I watched Luke, whether it was in those one-on-ones or in team drills, a full 11-on-11 action, I didn't see him lose a rep. And I think that's a really good sign when you talk about a sophomore who's trying to develop into that guard spot, added weight in the offseason to get more guard ready. Josh Fryer, on the other hand, looked slimmed down to me a little bit, looked leaned out, I should say. You know, he's not a slim guy, but he looked leaner when we talked to him in interviews. And that's something that I think is maybe a smart body change for him, if that's the direction, you know, focusing more on muscle and trying to get some of that fast twitch in there, because I've talked about it before. His feet are the main concern for me with him at tackle. He's shown to be a great run blocker. He can be good most of the time, even on pass blocks. But when he got beat last year, it was bad, and it was specifically bad against speed rushers like Missouri had. And he acknowledged how he didn't play up to his standard in that game or really over the course of the season, but still had great moments throughout the year, enough to be an All-Big Ten player. I just think when you're talking about blocking those speed rushers off the edge, having great fast feet is not necessarily always something that's easy to work on. It's a lot of it's just natural given talent. So maybe making some body changes, maybe just repping a lot against those style of rushers. Ohio State has some. JT Tuimoloau can certainly be that kind of speed rusher. So can Kenyatta Jackson Jr. So getting those reps, making some body changes perhaps to fix your biggest weakness possibly at that tackle position. And Josh Fryer, he's an All Big Ten tackle everywhere else, I think. If he can take that step, and it's a, like I said, difficult step to take, but if he can take it, I think you're just fine having him at right tackle, and all of a sudden this offensive line is looking a little more shored up, certainly than at this time last year.
Yeah, it seems right now, you know, if the season was to start today, that Ohio State's starting offensive line would likely be Josh Simmons at left tackle, Donovan Jackson at left guard, Seth McLaughlin at center, Luke Montgomery at right guard, and Josh Fryer at right tackle. Now, you know, that's not necessarily finalized yet. I think especially from center to right tackle, Carson Hinsman's still in the mix there, competing at center. You know, Josh Fryer, like you said, you know, still has to prove that, you know, he can be that guy they can consistently rely on in pass pro. Luke Montgomery, you know, he talked about it earlier this week. He's still learning how to play guard. He came in as a tackle, was there all last year. So he's still got something to show at right guard, but I think his upside is so high that, you know, I think he's a guy they want to have in the lineup this year. I think, you know, his athleticism, his quickness, and I think, you know, that's something where a lot of times you think about guard, you maybe just kind of think of like the bigger, stouter guy. And so you think of a Luke Montgomery maybe being a more natural fit for tackle. But I think, you know, there was always a thought that he would potentially move inside just because he doesn't quite have that prototypical tackle height and length. And I think with Chip Kelly coming in, I think they really want to have those quick guards. They certainly already have one in Donovan Jackson. And so I think there's a premium on quickness there at that position where Luke, as he continues to physically mature, as he continues to develop as an offensive lineman, they believe he has really high upside at that guard position. And so, you know, I right now with the offensive line, I'm not yet at the point where I feel great about the offensive line, like this offensive line is going to be awesome. But I do feel better about the offensive line right now than I did at this time last year. I think last year, you know, coming out of some of the open practices we saw where the offensive line was really getting beat very consistently, I think we were both pretty concerned at this time last year that the offensive line could be a real problem for Ohio State. I'm cautiously optimistic right now about this offensive line. I think the pieces are there. I think that starting five can be good enough to have a potential to be a really good offensive line this year. You know, it's still possible, you know, depending on, you know, who might enter the transfer portal after the spring, it's certainly still possible that Ohio State could bring in someone else to compete for starting jobs, whether that be at tackle or at guard. But right now, I'd use that term cautiously optimistic with this offensive line, where I don't know yet if it's going to be a great offensive line, but I am fairly confident that this offensive line is at least going to be better than it was last year. And granted, the bar was set very low, especially if the way last year ended. But I do believe that this offensive line, I don't think this offensive line is going to be bad. I don't know if it's going to be great, but I do believe it's going to be better. It's just a question of, can it be better enough to be the offensive line Ohio State needs to be a national championship caliber team this year?
Yeah, better enough. That is the question. Luke Montgomery, love his skill set at guard, frankly, for the Chip Kelly offense. His ceiling anyway, his potential. When you talk about a guy who played some tight end, played some defensive end in high school, he is the more athletic style of guard to where I think pulling, blocking in space, those kinds of things could be a real asset with his skill set. And I really like that mesh with the Chip Kelly offense. In terms of who Luke, the offensive line, is going to be blocking for this year, Carlos Laughlin got hired as Ohio State's new running backs coach on Monday. Was Oregon's running backs coach the last 2 years. His no coincidence it happened Monday. That was when his buyout dropped from Oregon from, you know, the full salary to just 50% of it. But in any case, I think this is an intriguing hire for Ohio State when you talk about a guy who has a very unique background in terms of working in law enforcement while he was coaching high school football. He started volunteering in Memphis's weight room in 2017, worked his way up the ranks pretty quickly. and a guy who you could tell has a certain authenticity and intensity about him that recruits might like. So, you know, Dan, thoughts on this Carlos Laughlin hire?
Yeah, I think this is a good hire for Ohio State. I think you look at what he did at Oregon in his 2 years there at Oregon. Oregon had one of the best rushing offenses in the country. His running backs were very productive in his 2 years coaching them. So I think there's reason to feel good about this hire. He doesn't have maybe as much experience as you would like for someone stepping into this role. He's only been a full-time college running backs coach for 3 years, but I think he has a very interesting background that has guided him to this point. And this is a guy who, you know, after playing at Chattanooga and, you know, briefly playing professional football, he worked in law enforcement. And actually when he, you know, was coaching high school football in Tennessee, and then actually when he started at Memphis back in 2017, he was actually splitting his time between coaching and, you know, working the graveyard shift at a local prison, you know, as a correctional officer. And so to see him go from basically volunteering at the weight room at Memphis 7 years ago to now being the running backs coach at Ohio State, I think that tells you he's doing something right, because he has worked his way up the ranks really fast. And you know, Ryan Day was addressing this hire on the radio on Tuesday morning. You know, he mentioned that, you know, Carlos isn't someone who necessarily came from a football family. He's not someone who necessarily had those connections that would have helped him work his way up the ranks really quickly. And so everything he's gotten, he's earned and he's deserved by proving himself as a coach. And we know that Ryan Day and Chip Kelly were very thorough in this process. Ryan Day said that they identified 10 to 12 candidates and they interviewed 7 of them. So this wasn't just going out, picking a guy and hiring him. You know, they talked to a lot of different candidates. They actually got the current running backs on the team involved in those interviews and asking them for their feedback. And I think collectively between, you know, Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, the running backs, everybody who was involved in that decision, they all agreed that Carlos Laughlin was someone who would be a good fit for this Ohio State program. And we haven't had a chance to talk to Carlos yet. That should happen next week. But just from the clips of interviews that I've seen of him, I feel like he's someone who is going to be a good fit for this culture that Ryan Day wants to have at Ohio State. We hear Ryan Day talk so much about competitiveness and toughness being important components for Ohio State. And I'm sure a lot of fans out there want to see more of that, you know, based on, you know, how that rivalry game has gone over the last few years. And I think he's somebody who is going to be able to contribute to that. I mean, he's someone who's talked a lot about, you know, I expect my guys to be competitors. I don't care what their stars were in high school. I expect them to come in and compete. And basically, I think there was one, you know, famous interview he had where, you know, he basically said, you know, if you don't want to compete, well, transfer portal's over there. And he said that he doesn't coach, quote, soft batch cookies, which honestly just makes me want some cookies. But that is his phrasing that he uses to describe players who maybe aren't tough, who maybe don't want to stick it out through the tough times. And so I think that, you know, he's somebody who I am confident is going to be a good fit for Ohio State. I think the big question obviously is going to be recruiting, because he doesn't have that, you know, long background to where you can really evaluate his history and say he's a great recruiter. But he's somebody who seems to be well liked by players. And the good thing is, because he is coming from Oregon, he already has an established relationship with some of Ohio State's top running back targets in the class, namely Jordan Davison and Bo Jackson. And so I think he's somebody who's going to be able to come in and give Ohio State an immediate chance to get some of the running backs that it's already been recruiting in this class. And I think, you know, if maybe, you know, if you had gotten a guy like a Robert Gillespie from Alabama or a DeMarco Murray from Oklahoma, maybe those guys would have been a little bit more proven just based on their experience. But I think the upside of this hire of Carlos Laughlin is very high.
I'd agree with that. I think that while he hasn't gotten the result, he hasn't had a chance to get those results, get that track record on the recruiting trail yet, I think when you talk about his clear sort of authenticity, his toughness, his combative approach, or as you might call it, to coaching. I think that's something a lot of players gravitate toward. A lot of running backs are very competitive, very juiced up guys in that way. And I think, you know, he might have some cookies that are tough to bite down on in his running back rooms in the future. I do love me some warm chocolate chip cookies out of the oven, though. I can't talk too bad on soft batch cookies. Another intriguing hire for Ohio State this week. Tim Drevno get in as a quality control coach. He was Chip Kelly's offensive line coach at UCLA after Fry left. A ton of experience as an offensive line coach in both college and the NFL. You know, there is a... I think this is a great hire when you talk about player development and being able to sit down with guys, address areas, and really make those tweaks. That's what quality control is about. But also, you know, for a guy who's Justin Fry's position within Ohio State's coaching staff, not as secure as others, perhaps just based on results, maybe a little bit of an extra bit of pressure for Fry entering this year, when a guy who has the resume of a potential Ohio State assistant is now already in the building in a quality control role.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic there, because he was actually the guy who replaced Justin Fry at UCLA when Justin Fry became Ohio State's offensive line coach. And they had kind of worked together in a similar fashion in 2021, because he initially joined UCLA's coaching staff as an analyst back in 2021 before he became their offensive line coach in 2022. So I think the good thing about it is you look at Chip Kelly, Justin Fry, Tim Drevno, these guys all have a history of working together. So that synergy, you would think he's someone who's going to come in and be able to help pretty seamlessly with that offensive line. And certainly after last year, I think you can use all the help you can get in terms of bolstering that offensive line. So I think this is a very good hire for a support staff role for Ohio State. I mean, this is a guy who has a ton of experience coaching offensive linemen. He was also the offensive coordinator at Michigan from 2015 to 17. He has NFL experience with the San Francisco 49ers. So I think anytime you can bring in a guy with that kind of experience to be a support staffer, that's pretty clearly a good thing. And to your point on Justin Fry, I mean, there were rumors when Chip Kelly was hired that the two offensive assistants who were kind of on the hot seat were Tony Alford and Justin Fry. We've obviously seen Tony Alford now leave for Michigan and be replaced with Carlos Lachlan. So Justin Fry might be the guy who's kind of under the microscope now on that offensive coaching staff this upcoming season. And so bringing in a guy who could potentially be a replacement if the offensive line doesn't perform up to standard this year. Granted, he's now going to have a role in that too. And so the ideal scenario here is that Tim Drevno and Justin Fry work great together. The offensive line takes a big step forward, and Justin Fry continues to be Ohio State's offensive line coach in 2025. But I think certainly based on the way last year went for the offensive line, it certainly does not hurt to have another experienced offensive line coach who, even if he can't coach the offensive lineman every day, can give the coaching staff another set of eyes to evaluate that unit and come up with strategies for making it better.
Yeah, and I think there's an element of competition to it too. I mean, Fry is going to know his position in the coaching staff better than you or I, and I think he feels maybe some pressure. If maybe he feels some pressure, then having a guy that you can look over your shoulder and see what he's doing, and you know, there's maybe a sort of a competition element at play that we often see with players among coaches, where Fry is going to want to coach to the best of his ability, maybe. You know, I overall, I don't think there's it's just a good hire for Ohio State. Quality control guys aren't talked about much, but as good as a quality control hire as you can make, I would think, On the Ohio State basketball front now, a lot of news has happened this past week. I'd say, you know, an equal, if not more, amount of news than on the football side of things. Just lots of transfer portal stuff, really, for Ohio State. Also lost an assistant coach, too. But I think the biggest two pieces of news were the addition of Michi Johnson from the transfer portal and the loss, which just happened here earlier on Wednesday, of Roddy Gale Jr. to the transfer portal. Per Adam Jardy of the Columbus Dispatch, those two things didn't have a whole lot to do with one another, although they do factor into pretty much the same position in this Ohio State offense as far as being starters go. Both are shooting guards, with Thornton playing the point guard ideally. But as it's kind of a mixed bag now, whereas the first 22 hours, you know, you look back and Jake Diebler laid a good foundation to build around for this offseason with Thornton, with Felix Okpara both confirming they were going to return, and then adding Michi Johnson later on Tuesday evening. You felt like there were now a lot of pieces coming in, but when you look at the addition of Michi Johnson versus the loss of Scotty Middleton and Roddy Gale Jr., I think thus far the transfer portal results, the negatives have outweighed the positives a little bit for Ohio State. Now, there's still going to be a lot of work to do here, and I do still really like getting Michi Johnson back on board. But this is a blow to lose Roddy Gale Jr. because I feel like he'd taken major steps over the past two seasons and, you know, just generally a really good high ceiling two-way player, I thought, that was going to be even better this year. Now Ohio State will be replacing with Michi Johnson.
Transfer portal giveth and taketh away. And, you know, that's just kind of a way it is now in college basketball. I mean, I don't think, you know, this is even necessarily related to the coaching change here. I think this is just kind of a way it is in college basketball now, where, you know, you're going to have comers and goers every year, and it's something that you have to navigate every year. That said, certainly the hope was, you know, we talked about it last week, but there were really five core players you really wanted to retain for next season. And we now know that three of those players are coming back: Bruce Thornton, Felix Okpara, and Devin Royal. Two of them are not: Roddy Gale Jr. and Scotty Middleton. And so, you know, if you had four of those five coming back, you'd feel better than you do with only three of those five coming back, for sure. And, you know, certainly, you know, both of those guys that they're losing are big losses. You know, Roddy Gale was their third leading scorer this past season. I think you really looked at, you know, him and Bruce and Felix as the main building blocks of this team, as guys going into their junior year that already have 2 years of a lot of experience under their belt. I think that bringing in Michi certainly helps to mitigate that. And, you know, the conversation changed here pretty quickly, because when Michi initially came in, the conversation was about, well, how does Michi fit when you already have Bruce and Roddy? Well, now it's pretty simple. Michi's going to be the starting two guard alongside Bruce. They're still going to need to now go add another guard from a transfer portal, because with losing Roddy, you know, they do have Junie Mobley coming in, who I think is going to be able to play right away. They're hoping to keep Tayson Chapman, and he's certainly a guy who has the potential to play a bigger role next year. But I think they are going to still look to bring in another guard here. We know that they have, you know, been in touch with several other guards in the portal. Matt Aloko from Princeton, they hosted him for a visit alongside Michi this past weekend. So I think he's certainly a name to watch as a possible addition to the backcourt. Jalen Sullinger, the son of J.J. Sullinger, nephew of Jared Sullinger. He was the leading scorer at Kent State last year. He's another guy that they have been in contact with. And then, you know, the name that, you know, everybody's really wondering about now, another guy who certainly has famous ties, is Bronny James, as the rumors have started about his future. Now, I do think, you know, we should be clear that as we're recording here on Wednesday, Bronny James has not entered the transfer portal yet. There was a report of sorts on Tuesday night that Bronny James was going to enter the transfer portal, but the person who put that out there has a track record in recent history of tweeting things that they've seen from other outlets and not necessarily verified. And so I would not put a lot of stock into that report on Bronny James. However, when LeBron was asked about it after the Lakers game on Tuesday night, he said that, you know, Bronny's got a decision to make. And so I think it's certainly very possible that Bronny could end up in the transfer portal. I think until he's actually in the transfer portal, there's really no way of knowing whether he could be an actual option for Ohio State. Certainly one that would get people excited, certainly one that would help in terms of driving up attendance numbers for next year. But, you know, too early to say, I think, whether that would actually be realistic. But, you know, I think certainly as you sit here today, if you didn't get Meechie Johnson, you'd feel worse about where things are right now in the backcourt with Roddy Gale and Scotty Middleton leaving. But there is still a lot of work this team has to do. I think, you know, we'll see if further transfer attrition comes. As of now, Ohio State has two open scholarships. You know, I think if you factor in the likelihood that, you know, this may not be the last outgoing transfer for Ohio State, I think Ohio State needs to add, you know, a minimum of two more transfers who can be contributors this year, and probably three more.
Yeah, I'd say probably three. You know, we were discussing with Meechie and Roddy in our work group chat before this about whether it's an upgrade to get have Meechie instead of Roddy as your shooting guard. I think there's debate, a good debate on both sides of that. To me, I think Roddy is probably a better defender, a more efficient scorer. Meechie has yet to shoot 40% in a season. Came really close this year, as close as you can get, 39.9, but still hasn't hit a 40% threshold yet, where Roddy's shooting numbers have been better, not from three, but better overall. Meechie, however, is a better passer, takes better care of the ball. Roddy, still a gifted passer, but makes some boneheaded decisions sometimes with the basketball, as we saw this year, you know. So there is a good and a bad to both players, I think. It's going to be interesting to see how Meechie plays alongside Bruce, because they're both pretty ball dominant, but I think they have the tools to figure it out. And Meechie's experience is a help too when you talk about a guy who has been to the NCAA tournament, obviously a place where Ohio State wants to get back to this year, and experienced a pretty significant program turnaround there at South Carolina, going from, I believe it was 11-21 his first year, to a sixth seed in the NCAA tournament this year, although they were eliminated in the first round. As far as transfer portal goes, top priority remains a wing scorer to replace some of the production that Jamison Battle and Scotty Middleton gave you. Preferably someone who can shoot really well from three, but overall just a dynamic player who can be that starting wing and replace a lot of the scoring production. Devin Royal gives you some of that. He is more of a... he's a little more of a forward than Jamison, I think, in terms of how he plays. Jamison, definitely a forward too, but did a little more in terms just because of how deadly a shooter he was on the actual wing. Devin hasn't really incorporated that into his game yet. So unless he turns into a deadly three-point shooter somehow this offseason, you're going to see him play inside a little bit more, but still provide, you know, maybe some stuff from the wing there. But you'd like to see, just for depth purposes and how hard it is to replace Jamison Battle, you brought this up before, Dan, I think it'd be a good idea for this team to add both a three that can kind of do what Scotty Middleton would have done this year, and a four, if not a deadly shooter, a guy who can give you rebounding, give you defense, those sorts of things. In any case, they need someone else in the front court, because the depth is just not there right now between Felix Okpara, Devin Royal, and Austin Parks. You need another guy who can come in and provide some good minutes off the bench. If Zed Key comes back, maybe that's the answer. Not necessarily expecting that, but he has yet to make an official decision on what he's going to do with his final remaining year of eligibility, whether he wants to use it, whether he wants to use it at a different school, etc. The other thing is they still need depth at guard. They might have needed depth at guard if Roddy didn't transfer. They definitely need it now that he has. Like you said, Matt Aloco, Jalen Sullinger, kind of the top two candidates that have emerged thus far at that spot. So those are really the transfer list of priorities for Ohio State. I'd say definitely they need to add three more guys. And I'd even maybe push it as far as four. You can never have too much depth, especially with the aggressive style of play that Diebler has instituted here and wants to continue playing with, rolling a lot of guys, trying to get out and pace these Big Ten defenses because he doesn't want to mess around with them in the half court if he can avoid it. Obviously, you have to have some half. You have to have a good bit of half court in your offense, but the more transition game is what worked for Ohio State offensively down this stretch. So I think those are the priorities, and that's what needs addressed now. You have to go out and attack it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the roster right now, I think, you know, the starting lineup would be pretty clear. What you have right now, it would be Felix Akpara at center, Devin Royal and Evan Mahaffey at forward, and Michi Johnson and Bruce Fortin at guard. That's not a bad lineup. The problem is you don't really have a lot else right now, at least in terms of guys who have proven they can play at the collegiate level. And so, like you said, Jake Diebler wants to play 9 or 10 guys. That means you've got to add a few more guys in there that can contribute. And again, there could be some of that could come from Tayson Chapman. It could come from, you know, Junie Mobley, Colin White coming in, you know, Zed Key if he comes back. But there's certainly a need to add a few more guys who can contribute this year. And in some cases, I think, especially at those two forward spots, to potentially be starters. We haven't heard as much yet about Ohio State, you know, who they could go after at forward, but we do know of a couple names they've been in contact with. Adu Fierro, Kentucky transfer, 6'8" wing who scored 7.2 points per game this past season. I think that's an intriguing name. That's a guy who, you know, kind of has forward size but guard skills. So I think he's a guy that if you're looking for an upgrade at that three position, somebody to replace Scotty Middleton, I think he's certainly a guy who could fit that bill. They've also been in touch with Kerry Booth, 6'10" Notre Dame transfer. I think he's certainly someone who could help out in the front court, whether it be playing the five, playing the four, giving them some more depth either behind Akpara or someone to play alongside him. And there is a Central Ohio tie there. He's the son of Calvin Booth, former NBA player who grew up in Reynoldsburg, went to Grove Fort Madison. So, you know, those are a couple names to watch. I'm sure more will emerge here, especially now that Ohio State has, you know, at least two scholarships open for the time being.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as other transfer news goes, you know, you had Bowen Hardman leave this week. That wasn't much of a shock, given that his role decreased after Jake Diebler took over for Chris Holtman in the back half of the season. Not back half, really, back like quarter. But he didn't have a clear place in this offense, in this scheme moving forward. As deadly of a three-point shooter as he can be at times, I think the other areas of his game were just not up to that Big Ten caliber, unfortunately. But wishing the best for Bowen that he can go and be a superstar at a MAC school maybe or something somewhere.
Yeah, we'll see where he ends up. Certainly, I think, you know, probably the right move for him. I don't really think there was going to be much of a path to a bigger role for him at Ohio State. So the right move for him to go somewhere else where he can play some more. But, you know, this is going to be a big few weeks now for Jake Diebler. You know, when you lose a couple guys like Roddy Gale and Scotty Middleton, and suddenly the honeymoon phase starts to wear off a little bit. So now, you know, I think he's got to go prove I think he made a great first splash by going and getting Michi Johnson. Again, this is a guy who was a leading scorer on an NCAA tournament team last year. And so I know there were maybe some mixed reactions from people to Michi. In my opinion, Michi, great addition, especially if we operate in the silo of, you know, getting Michi is not the reason why Roddy left. At least that's the word right now, is Roddy didn't leave because they got Michi. You know, if it's a one-for-one trade, then it would definitely be a debate of whether that's actually a good thing. But if you just look at each move on its own, I think adding Michi is absolutely a good thing, especially now that you have lost Roddy, to bring in a guy who is a proven high-level scorer in the SEC for an NCAA tournament team. I think Michi's a great addition, a great start to the transfer portal for Jake Diebler. Now he's got to prove he can go out and get two or three more impact guys. And I think the bigger challenge now is you got a guy in Michi who's from Ohio, who had been a part of a program before, who you had a longstanding relationship with. You know, as soon as Michi entered the portal, Ohio State was the front runner to land Michi Johnson. Now you got to prove that you can go get the guys that maybe you're not the immediate front runner for. Now you got to be able to, now you got to prove that you can go sell Ohio State to other really good players on the portal and get them to become Buckeyes. And the next few weeks will be telling as to how well Jake Diebler can do that right now.
Right. And certainly as the full picture of what Ohio State's roster attrition is going to be, whether this is it or whether they lose more, there could very well be other names that emerge for Ohio State that we really haven't heard yet. And I want to, you know, I also want to throw that out there to people, because who's to say that, you know, it might be someone totally off our radar right now that they end up bringing in, because there's still going to
be somebody who's not in the transfer portal yet.
Exactly. So there's still a lot to work out from this first offseason from Jake Diebler. There's been some good. Obviously, losing Roddy Gale and Scotty Middleton is, I don't think there's any world where you say that's a good thing, but you have ways to, a method to replace that production and still build a really good team for next year. And they have a solid core, like we said, with Bruce Thornton, Felix Akpara, and Devin Royal coming back to build around a little bit here.
Well, there's certainly going to be a lot more basketball news to come. Also, a big week ahead for Ohio State football, as we are now just 10 days away from the spring game. And so we will be back next week to talk about all of that, and we hope you'll join us then.